I'd like to welcome all of you to this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, March 15th, the Ides of March, beware, 2007. Calling the meeting to order at 1:40 in the afternoon. Members present are Senators Bundy, Davis, Ellis, and Stevens. Appreciate you all being with us here today. Folks from in town and out of town, or out of town and guests especially. I want to note for the record that we will not be hearing Senate Bill 99, Police Standards Council, today under bills previously heard, nor will we hear Senate Bill 18, Property Foreclosures and Executions. The sponsors are, and committee staff are still working on those pieces of legislation, and they'll be back before us at a later time that will be publicly announced. We have two pieces of business today. One will be House Bill 108, which we'll take up first. That's the extension of the Board of Marine Pilots. I think we can deal with that expeditiously. And then we'll move into a briefing, an overview, entitled Current Challenges to Women in the Work in the Alaska Workplace. So with that, let's see if the committee members could turn to CS for House Bill number 108, Labor and Commerce. That is the item before us at this time. And I know Mr. Clow is with us again. If there are, or no, Mr. Clow is going to testify on the legislation. No, just available for questions. Okay. Is there any, there's no known opposition to this legislation. It's not controversial in any way. It's a important piece of housekeeping that needs to pass. Is there any discussion of the legislation? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to move the committee, or to move the committee substitute on to the next committee referral.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move CS for House Bill number 108, LS0445-C, with the individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Okay. Any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the next committee of referral. Okay. We will pass the committee report around. I knew that would free up a few seats in the audience. So if our guests can backfill in those empty seats. I'd like to ask Garen Tarr to come forward, my former chief of staff and friend on many issues. Ms. Tarr, I understand you're one of the organizers of the Women's Summit, the women's advocates who've come to Juneau, and going to let you make some opening comments and introduce the panelists.
On workplace challenges. And what we're hoping to accomplish here is just highlight some of the things that women around the state are working on that affect their ability to maintain jobs and just workplace issues. And while we're not considering a particular piece of legislation, I hope that we start a dialogue here and maybe some ideas are generated about things that could be worked on in the future, and just give an overview and have that discussion about some of the workplace challenges. So with that, what we have is we have a few different speakers here, and Senator Ellis, I think, is going to maybe modify the order based on a visit from
and she has just joined us. Fantastic. Representative Cisna, welcome. Very good. Thank you very much. Representative Cisna, do you want to join us at the table? And Sarah, why don't you come on up with her as well, if you both can pull seats there in front of the microphone for the record. And Representative Cisna, I understand you're the sponsor of legislation on the subject of breastfeeding in the workplace. I'm the sponsor of that legislation in the Senate. And if you wanted to go ahead and begin, and then Sarah can take it from there.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. sponsor of, but it has, like, good legislation has been brought to us by citizens, and Nasser is one of my neighbors in my district, and I know is really a citizen that has worried a lot about the quality of children's issues, certainly, but also parents, and has a rich background in education as well as the community. I was very happy to sponsor this legislation because I am, in fact, the product of the reason why this legislation is so very important. And my own life story began with a mother who, in her generation, thought that breastfeeding was, in fact, something that one did not do if one was a cultured woman. And so she had her second child, her first daughter, and did not breastfeed her. I had extraordinarily severe allergies, and at six months was dying, literally dying of both starvation and secondary infections from the eczema rashes that I had all over my body. So when I had my own daughter, I was in fact a single mother when she was born, and it was for me an extraordinarily important thing to nurse. I also had to support us, so working meant that I had to go through the gauntlet that one goes through in trying to both work and do what the responsibilities one must do, and also meet employer expectations. And so I'm going to turn the mic over to Sarah, but I just want you to know that my story is times how many people and our Alaskan workers must have the opportunity to both work and to take care of their children. Both are absolutely mandatory for us.
Thank you. Senators, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be able to talk about this legislation, have this opportunity to join the Women's Summit. I am a board member of the Alaska Breastfeeding Coalition, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about why this legislation would be important for the state. The first thing I wanted to talk about is breastfeeding itself. Representative Sisna articulated one experience of the health benefits of breastfeeding, but has many scientifically proved health benefits versus formula feeding, and those benefits are actually increased with the duration that a woman breastfeeds. Some of those benefits are less ear infections, fewer gastrointestinal illnesses, respiratory illnesses, which is a hot topic in the state right now with RSV and in the bush. Also, a proven protective factor against childhood obesity. And it also has protective factors for the mother. So those are healthcare savings, and they actually have been proven through studies to show a return on investment. If you prolong breastfeeding, a breastfed child can save in a year between $350 to $417 in a managed care setting. So you're actually saving money. We had a public forum in Anchorage just last night, and I got some recent data from the state PRAMS analyst. PRAMS is the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Management System that we have, and we have quite a high participation rate. So this population-based study has really valid numbers. And she provided for me, her name is Kathy Perrin-Hester, she's the PRAMS analyst for the state, some analysis of the breastfeeding rates. Now, Alaska has phenomenal initiation rates. We are always in the top three. We have 90% of mothers leave the hospital intending to breastfeed and have begun breastfeeding. Unfortunately, that isn't maintained. And this is the concern that we have. Why are women not continuing to breastfeed? And that's the main concern of the coalition. The coalition is made up of mostly healthcare practitioners who work with breastfeeding mothers, whether it's in a WIC setting or in a pediatric clinic, but somehow they're involved with breastfeeding mothers or pregnant women. And so she put together some information for me, and I'd just like to read a few statistics. 42% of mothers with newborns indicated they were currently in school or working outside of home. The percentage of working mothers who indicated they were still breastfeeding was 55.5%, was significantly less than the percentage of non-working mothers who were still breastfeeding. That was 69.3%, and that was at 4 months old. And the Alaska 2010 a goal is at 50% women still breastfeeding at 6 months. So we're just barely making it if the woman is working. She also found that the percent of mothers who indicated that they took their baby with them to work was 9%. She actually said that that was a write-in. People could say, where do you take your child if you are working? And most people said that they give them to somebody else, but as in a child care setting or a spouse. And she found that so many people wrote in that said they were able to take it, that it was worth the percentage. And those people who were able to take their baby to work with them, 70.8% were still breastfeeding, as opposed to 53.8% who left their children at a child care provider. Mm. And the top five reasons that women stop breastfeeding, number one is difficulty nursing. Number two is the baby's not satisfied with only breast milk. Number three, the mother is not producing enough milk. Number four, mom's nipples were sore. And number five, at 23.1%, is mom went back to work or school. And I thought the most pertinent piece of information was from a WIC professional last night, and I just want to share this in light of Denali Kid Care and Medicaid costs. She put together a random sample of charts from a WIC clinic, and of the 98 breastfeeding women on the charts who returned to work, only 17 were able to pump while at work. And the reasons were cited: my boss is a man and said he made him uncomfortable, I wasn't able to get a break, there's no private place for me. And at knowing that we have several thousand children and women on WIC, participants and benefits of Denali Kid Care, those babies that aren't getting breast milk are going to cost the system more money. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Before you go, though, could you, I'm curious about, since we're the Labor and Commerce Committee and we're likely to have this legislation before us at a later time, we would be concerned about the trade-offs in the workplace. And I think you've probably won the argument over the years with the value of breastfeeding and the money that can be saved and the health of the child and the mother. I think you've carried the day with those arguments. But it's a difficult rub with employers of various sizes and reasonable accommodations. Can you just help the committee members help me think about the trade-offs in the workplace? What are reasonable requests and what are things that might not be so easily accommodated in the workplace? You know, in a perfect world, what kind of setting would you see for women to express milk or to feed the baby in the workplace?
They have a policy where the infant is able to brought to work during employee's break time so that she can actually breastfeed. She doesn't have to express breast milk with an electric pump. But they have small clinics where probably the baby's in the community, and that's very easy for a caregiver to do that. But I think, and also you need to keep in mind the safety of the child in this case as well. There's some settings where you wouldn't want an infant to come to work. But we're basically, the legislation is looking for a minimum standard, which is break time that maintains milk supply, because you have to play catch up with your mother, isn't allowed to express breast milk, and the health of mom. It's actually dangerous if you don't breastfeed if you sit. And also a place to do it other than a restroom. And most businesses have a conference room, or the employee has an office or somewhere where they can lock the door. And
I could just add that the says not a excuse me, a toilet stop. So in other words, there's lots of and I have used many office bathrooms, and usually there's always room for a chair. And having the wash basin right there for washing hands is a convenient thing, and that also allows for a certain amount of privacy. I think in most office settings you can find a corner shelter, there's a locking door, a closet is fine. But the legislation itself doesn't restrict very much at all. And it tries to leave it as essentially liberal as possible for the employer. And I might just throw in here something I don't think Sarah mentioned, and that is, if a mother were to wean during the process of working, then there actually are health hazards for mom herself, and it's extraordinarily painful. So you've got an employee that's going through a health condition at work, and always going to take some time off.
Mm.
So there's really lots of incentives for an employer to want to keep his worker at work and expressing her mouth to either bottle it or to dispose of it one way or the other. Both are good, healthy situations for both mom and child.
And Sarah, has your organization begun conversations or had conversations with any of the business organizations like National Federation of Independent Business, the State Chamber, to kind of begin the dialogue to bring them along?
That is our intention. The first conversation that I began was actually with labor unions in the state. We have endorsement right now for the legislation from NEA Alaska because they offer a comp benefit to their benefits of the health trust, and they felt that it wasn't reasonable for them to offer that benefit if they couldn't guarantee that their beneficiaries could use it at work. And we also have I have three other endorsements from health organizations. So it is our intention to begin that dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on behalf of the committee, I'd make that request. That helps us, it makes it easier in the legislature to promote legislation that where there's been a dialogue and some work together, so it doesn't come to the legislature as a conflict between business interests and the interest of a child.
I would add to that then, the way it's been presented to us from the CDC, because they offer quite a lot of support for the state breastfeeding coalition, is that it's in conjunction with many employee wellness plans. Mm. And in fact, that is how it's offered. The CDC has a lactation program for all of their employees, and it's built into their employee wellness plan. And employee wellness plans are really, I wouldn't say they're like a rage, like it's a phenomenon, but they're certainly taking off in Alaska. And there's been quite a few conversations locally in Anchorage about employee wellness programs and quite a bit of interest. So I see them as working hand in hand because they save businesses money.
Right. Excellent. Any other comments or questions from the committee? If not, thank you both very much. We appreciate it. Okay, next we have, is it Kelly or Cindy? Kelly Oakes, come on up. Welcome. If you could just state your name and your affiliation for the record and go right ahead.
Ideally, if we had legislation for prescriptive equity health, we would ask that a medical benefits plan that covers prescriptions would cover all prescriptions. Many of these benefit plans cover Viagra, but they don't cover birth control. So that's kind of an interesting fact. Out of the 100 top private companies that called, only a third provided contraceptive coverage for their employees. I am personally somebody who works part-time to support myself as I go through school, and my company is one of these companies that does not provide for contraceptive services. I do know that it's expensive, and for an individual it's expensive. It can cost a woman an average of $1,000 more per year than a comparable male might pay, just because of the monthly fees for birth control. I think that I would like to just welcome you to ask me any questions that I may have not covered completely, and I'd like to restate that I think this is a very important issue.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Oakes. We appreciate your presentation. Are there comments or questions from the committee? Are you aware of what other states are doing in this regard?
Yes, that's a good question. Thank you. 26 out of the 50 states already require prescription equity, and there are more states that have this topic already going through their legislation process.
And Senator Davis?
I'd like to know, are you interested in having introduced some legislation?
Yes, we are.
Are you working with someone on it now?
I believe so.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation. Cindy Spaniers. Cindy, welcome to the committee.
Alaskans would be hurt by instituting a tip credit, a burden
likely falling more on women who already earn just 68.3% as much as men. And this is based on a total annual earnings from the Department of Labor. It's not entirely clear why there is this gender difference in the first place. The Alaska Economic Trends edition published in September of 2003 and updated in 2005 speculated on a few reasons for the gender gap. They include career choices, differences in full-time versus part-time work, education and training levels, years of experience, and possibly discrimination. There is no data available to measure the wage rates, hours worked, or the educational level for individual workers by gender, only by profession. There is one area, however, where we know that some of the gender differences are narrower, and that is with local government employees. The public sector's gender gap is smaller, where women earn 76 cents for every dollar by being employed in state and local governments. But how will young female workers do under the new defined contribution retirement system? It's too early to tell, but please keep the following factors in mind when crafting public policy. In general, women earn less than men. Women invest more conservatively. Women live longer. Women juggle many things in their lives, from children, care of their parents, and usually they take care of others before taking care of themselves. It's unlikely that the present salaries in female-dominated professions, from administrative assistants to paraprofessionals, will ever allow them to save enough for their retirement. In conclusion, there are differences between men and women wage earners, and it might not be easy crafting a one-size-fits-all policy for all groups. But I would encourage you to imagine the incredible variety of work that people do every single day, both in the private and public sector. And thank you so much for taking the time today to explore this very important issue to Alaskans.
Ms. Spaniards, thank you very much for your presentation. Senator Bundy?
Thank you. Just adding to my level of knowledge would and helping with my curiosity. It was my understanding in the federal minimum wage law, there was an area, I think, American Samoa that was excluded where they do a lot of fish processing. Do you know when they included the Marianas, did they include that as well?
My understanding from the Washington Post article is that they did not. It is in the Senate. I don't know if there's an attempt to add that or not. I will say when we read this story, my 9-year-old added, why not put that one in too?
Mm-hmm. Out of the mouths of babes. My other question, if I might, having personal experience, my family, I know that some wait staff make really substantial tips, well in excess of $100 a shift. In the tip credit discussion, I mean, we don't have a bill before us, but in a discussion, has there been any thought to putting an upper limit so that tips in excess of, you know, for instance, $100 or $150 a shift would be considered part of a salary? Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Senator Mundy. Ms. Senator Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Senator. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the 68 cents per which is versus a dollar for a man. Was that a state figure or was that a national figure?
That was a state figure through the chair.
You did get it from the Department of, mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And Ms. Benders, can you remind us what is going on in Congress at the moment? I mean, I've followed it generally, but is the minimum wage bill still in the Senate then for, I know there was consideration of adding some tax breaks for small business and other things that might gain the president's signature if the minimum wage were balanced with some of those incentives. Do you know the current status? So we may see something happen. Impressive 9-year-old you have there who listens to his parents at the dinner table and carries on an intelligent discussion. Quite impressive. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we move on?
If the committee is interested, I have an article from the Juneau Empire in August where the writer went to various establishments. It's a well-rounded article. It takes into consideration business concerns, the Central Labor Council's concerns, but he also interviewed a number of the wait staff to get their feelings. And with your permission, perhaps I could leave it with you here today.
Sure. Dana will collect it from you. We'll make sure folks get it. So thank you, Ms. Spaniers. We appreciate it.
Again, thank you for your time.
Mr. Hart, did you want to come back and make some closing comments or sum up for us? We are happy to provide this forum for your out of town visitors here to the Capitol.
Thank you. I did want to just see if there were any other attendees that felt inspired and wanted to come up and offer comments.
We're a friendly group. On the subject relating to women in the workplace, yeah, we don't want to stray too far afield from that subject and the purview of our committee. So, Robin, good afternoon.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Ellis, and thank you, members of the committee, for letting me speak. I'm actually going to speak as a small business owner and say one of the problems that I know is out there is insurance coverage for everybody in the workplace. Very expensive for us to, as a small company, because we have less than 15 employees, to offer insurance to our employees at some sort of reasonable rate to give them good coverage, because we want them to have dental and eye and everything else coverage. But so it's extremely expensive to do that for a small company. And one of the things that has been talked about for years but doesn't seem to get anywhere is the fact that if small businesses could pool together so that the pool would be broader, so that in case, I mean, we had one person had ended up having to have open heart surgery. Well, needless to say, our insurance rates went up dramatically the following year. So if we could have larger pools so that the risk is spread among a broader group of people, I mean, I know it's expensive for insurance, for small companies to have this insurance, but possibly more would cover their employees if it wasn't that expensive. And I do think it would benefit both women and men throughout.
Robin, before you go, could you state your full name and your name of your business for the record?
My name is Robin Smith, and the name of the business is Arctic Wire Rope and Supply.
Okay. Any comments or questions for the witness? How would you, before you go, how would you feel about the Massachusetts approach, or what Governor Romney, Governor Schwarzenegger's approach in California? I don't know if you're familiar with those, but it's generally a mandate that, just like mandatory auto insurance, it's a mandate that everybody in the state carry health insurance, and there are incentives and penalties on businesses of various sizes to provide health insurance. They've expanded Medicaid and their children's health care plans to cover the folks who are uninsured. Do you have any thoughts about how that might work with your business here?
Well, I think mandates are always difficult because people have a lot of resentment about the government just getting in and saying, this is the way it's going to be. And then small business could claim that it's going to put them out of business and they won't be able to cover this. And I think that would receive a lot of resistance. I am not that familiar with what they have done. I mean, this was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thought of mine when we just started to talk about this. But I don't know what's going on in California or in Massachusetts, so I can't speak to that. But I think if we could lower the cost of insurance and then make it, then possibly do encouragement, some sort of incentives for small business then to join these insurance pools, that's probably a better way to handle it than just having a mandate come down, which I often find that people resist, and then it's harder to get it past the legislature.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Davis?
Maybe a question and a comment, but it seems like we've had legislation to come before us before talking about pooling of businesses in order to provide insurance rates at a lower rate. And I don't know exactly what year that it happened, but that legislation has been around. And it seemed like we might have had something on the book that was not working. And maybe Senator Bundy could speak to that more than I can, because I remember serving on this committee, the insurance person coming before us saying that this is what we have, but they're not working because there's not enough people in the pool. And so therefore the insurance is higher than we anticipated that it would be. But I don't know what program it was that they were talking about at the time. And also, there's a piece of legislation out there now that was introduced last year that died. I don't know what's on the House side or the Senate side, that I hear has been reintroduced, pooling of businesses together. I don't know what piece it is, but it's worth looking into. If that might be something you would be interested in, and if that doesn't, if it doesn't cover your concerns, maybe you could discuss that during that bill that's going to be heard with the people that introduced it.
Yeah, and it's not just small businesses. It's also people who are, you know, who operate their own business, individuals who run their own businesses who also find it extremely expensive. And like I said, this was just a spur-of-the-moment decision to come up and speak to it, but I do know it's an issue. I know insurance coverage is an issue across the country, and anything we could do to make it more affordable would be appreciated, I'm sure.
And as you all probably know, Senator Davis chairs the Senate Hess Committee, and we've had some preliminary discussions about a joint hearing of our two committees to listen to business people of, from various sizes of organizations and talk about what's going on out there in the marketplace and the expense and difficulty in covering folks. It seems to me that it's becoming a real drag on the bottom line and competitiveness in this world market that we find ourselves in, and that it's not just a sort of a human rights issue or you know, covering folks for, you know, all the value of that, but it's become a business issue where businesses are saying it's killing us out here, the cost of this insurance, and we want to do the right thing, but we're constrained by the bottom line, and the Japanese have figured it out and everybody else in the industrialized world, and it's hard for American business to compete in that environment. So we are likely to be hearing from more business people, small, large, medium concerns across the state, and see if we can find some consensus points in that regard. Robin, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'll echo Garen's request. Anyone else that would like to speak briefly before we wind things up? Yes, ma'am, come on up. I think this is very helpful to the Labor and Commerce Committee to hear about some of the things that may turn into budget items or legislation sometime in the future. So if you could just state your name for the record, please.
Salary schedule back in 1988 and what minimum wage was, and we thought we were doing pretty good because we were able to pay a college graduate $11.70 an hour, provide some health insurance. We're almost 19 years later, we're still paying them $11.70 an hour, and now instead of offering full health care, they have to pay a portion. We no longer insure their children, they have to pay a portion of that. So a lot of changes happened coming up in terms of minimum wage and those kind of things, but we're still stuck. And so now we're faced with not being able to hire people, having very high turnover. And as people find out they can actually make more at Walmart than at a social service agency, it's very hard to fight that. Sometimes they have better benefits. So we'd definitely like for you all to remember that the social service agencies, many of us are grant funded. And as funding stays very, very stuck, we can't provide any more to our folks or else we have to cut services. And because of the nature of how we look at things and what we do, we don't want to do that. So we just keep, you know, using our employees up is what we do. And so to keep that in mind, that there are many women working in this field, we get into a flip side of that is as their wage does increase, all of a sudden Denali Kid Care, child care assistance, all that disappears. And the cost of living in Alaska is really has dramatically increased over the past years. And so we need to really think about taking care of our women, especially we have a lot of single mothers out there who are trying to provide for doing so on $11.70 an hour, it just doesn't work.
It's a struggle. Senator Bundy?
Thank you. I just invite you to join us in our quest to maintain a quality of life, but share some budget realities. That current budget, if it continues, state spending, it says we're likely be in a deficit in 2 years. And when we're in a deficit, that it's like overspending our credit cards. It gets rather interesting for us. Unless until I think the public makes some serious decisions about using some of the earnings of the permanent fund, we're going to be in some deep trouble, because I don't think we can tax our way. Many people say, well, we want to tax first, but I don't think we can take that much money out of the economy and not do some very negative things. But yet we have $1 billion a year in excess earnings that we could access if the general public will support that notion. And the POMV plan has been around for years, where we would use a portion of the earnings to support state services and still have a substantial dividend. But we're going to need your help. Yeah, well, when I get you and another 600,000 of your closest friends, we can do her. I mean, so far we have a coalition of two. We'll keep working on it. Okay.
And do you have thank you, Senator Bundy. Do you have a brief comment about child care, state of child care in the Fairbanks area?
Child care is very difficult, especially if you have an infant. It's very expensive. It's about $800 a child for child care for an infant.
Wow.
And when you're making $24,000 a year, and you bypassed, you know, you're just a little over what can be covered for child care assistance, it's all going to come out of your pocket. It's also, there's not enough child care providers. It's a very, very, very competitive market, for lack of a better term, in terms of trying to find a very good quality child care for an infant. When you get up into the toddler area, it gets a little easier to find child care, but still pretty expensive, somewhere in the neighborhood of $550 to $600 a month per child. And you might be able to find somebody around the $350 range when you just need after child care, after school child care. So child care is very, definitely very expensive, and lack of good quality child care available. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I think we need to wrap things up here. So thank you all very much for making the time and the effort and being with us in Juneau. It could very well turn out that some of these suggestions find their way into legislation or budget ideas. We're open to your suggestions, and I'd like to request that we have everyone's email address so we can keep people posted on some of these developments, and especially to the student, Ms. Oakes. Thank you very much for being brave and coming up here. Like I said, we're a friendly group, but I know it's sometimes a little intimidating, but this is your government, and thank you for participating. So, Ms. Tarr, thank you very much for organizing this, and is there any further business to come before the committee today? If not, I will adjourn the meeting at 2:25 in the afternoon.